Soy Power Podcast is a free podcast made possible by the support of our awesome Patreon sponsors. Head to toypowerpodcast.com and see how you can help.
Power, the podcast where we talk toys and everything pop culture. G'day, it's Trent here, and it's so wonderful to have your company today for episode 307. Today on the show, we're going to take a little look at some news. We then jump into some last of the Patreon questions. We wrap up a couple of movie reviews in our ongoing Is It Hit or Is It Shit? And we'll finish with some later scores. We got today in the Toy Power studio, we've got Scotty.
Hello there.
And Ben.
G'day, g'day.
And we'll send our best wishes to Frank, who's got a nasty kind of cold flu thing.
So, that's what we're hearing. Yes, yeah. I can hear him coughing from home. From here.
Pretty much. Poor guy.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Not cool. Hopefully gets better. And
get well.
3, 2, 1.
Cue music.
So what have you got for me?
I'm Batman.
But she's got a new hat.
If there's something that's going to make Frank feel better, it's probably no more Rat King or a new and improved Rat King. Now, Toy Power weren't the only ones banging on about the Super 7 Wave 10.
I think it was a worldwide toy communal backlash, wasn't it?
Universal. Yes. Now, we had heard the news that maybe they were going to swap out Rat King, do a bit of work on him, getting back up to a level that fans would be happy with. And remember when they dropped this news, there was that little kind of Karai 5-figure picture that very quickly came down.
Yeah, well, but once it's been posted on Facebook or social media, it you can't stop it going away because someone screenshotted it and then shared it to 10 groups and 10 groups shared it to 100 groups and 100 groups, you know. So it's out there. So that included Karai and the Rat King in the same rooftop image with the other characters. But now Rat King is gone and Karai has taken his spot. And honestly, I think this Karai is amazing. I really, really rate her highly. She's an awesome character in her own right. And I think this, you know, whilst some people are like, oh, I'm not sure if I'm in or out or whatever, I'm definitely in for this Karai.
You're getting the Karai.
Just by herself. Because I feel that my Shredder Shrine type collection is not complete without Karai. And honestly, there's only been, in my knowledge, only two other official Karai figures released.
Yeah, I think that's right. The 2007 movie got a kind of... No, sorry, the 2003 line.
Yes.
Had a Karai based on that for kids animation.
And then the 2012.
Well, and technically there were two. There was the Snake Karai.
Oh, yeah. But that's crap, right? Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of that one. Yeah.
No, so I think you're quite right. There were sort of two true Karai versions.
And then there's that Lotus Ninja in the cartoon line that is fairly similar to Karai, but... Yep. I don't even remember her being in the cartoon. It might have been just one episode scenario, and it's not officially Karai. It's by a different name. So
now this feels like an Ultimates figure.
Oh, definitely.
Three heads. Look at all the weapons. Now what's interesting is that Foot Ninja head. I've never seen that before.
No, I haven't either.
That's cool.
Whether it's going to be you know, adaptable to a male buck as well as a female buck. That'd be interesting. You know, can you put it on your foot soldier torso or not? I love the fact that she's got the mask around her mouth and things. That's going to be the head that I choose. I kind of wish that the bandana was on that head as well, but beggars can't be choosers. Obviously, she's pulled the bandana off and made it into her face mask. Watch out, Splinter. She has a compound bow, not just a bow and arrow, but this is a proper compound bow, and you get three little arrows and things, and promo images have her standing there pulling the strings of the bow ready to shoot, and I just can't. So that's going to be probably my chosen pose, but she comes with an awesome sword, the, I don't know what that other weapon is, the sort of hook.
Was that one
sling
that came with all the original turtles?
Yeah.
It's a can opener, guys.
Really? It's an oversized can opener. You get the pizza slice thing that goes in Raphael's, you know, on the back of his shell. A couple of ninja stars. And then you get the hook sling. You know,
with real chain.
Yeah, with real chain and a ball at the end. That's going to be a questionable second option for my display because I really like that weapon. I haven't seen that in very many versions with the chain and stuff. So, she is amazing. You know, four sets of different hands plus her fist hands, so five in total.
Yep.
And this is proper ultimates as opposed to, you know, three rats.
No, exactly. Hey, Wave 11 probably will include Rat King now from what we know. What do you think the changes are going to be to Rat King? What do you think they're going to do now? Obviously, we reading between the lines or understanding, they can't do a Playmates figure unless it's appeared in something else, right? So if the only place it's appeared is the Playmates toy, essentially they can't do that, is my understanding.
Well, what did he look like in the IDW comic book? Because he's pretty, you know, hobo-looking in that comic book. And that's where he comes with the little flute and things. But I mean, it was a year or so since I've read that comic, so I can't remember off the top of my head. But I think that's pretty, you know... beaten up like that.
So you reckon they're going to move from that very kind of boy band head
to
a more, you know, living in the sewers, eaten by rats kind of face?
Yeah, have to. Like that was too attractive for Rat King.
Do you think we're going to get anywhere near the Playmate style?
But the issue is you're not going to get his token grappling hook of rats.
The weapons are problematic, as we understand.
That's where I think is going to be a huge issue. But that's where Ninja Turtles and things needs to rise to the likes of Transformers and that third party, you know, Raymond Toys, I'm looking
Ramen,
at you.
Yeah, Ramen, I mean, they came out within, I reckon, days of the Rat King debacle and had proposed the head, you know, the new head. And it was lovely, obviously, a vintage Playmate style ahead. So I think, you know, they're going to reassess what comes out and maybe make a call. But I noticed even Ramen Toys were getting a bit of cease and desist from our friends over at Top Gun.
I was wondering how long this would take.
Well, you know, look, they're over there in China. So, you know, they're to some degree beyond the reach of the law, but that's not going to stop the likes of 20th Century Fox and
Tom Cruise, mate. Mission Impossible.
Right, he'll do it.
Scientology.
Yeah, he'll fly in and parachute down.
That's a hornet's nest you do not want to kick over.
But what was interesting was obviously they got the memo or the email saying, hey, guys, you're using a likeness to IP that we own without paying any ante up. And it sounded like they were playing ball. So it didn't sound like they were just going, ha-ha, you can't catch us. They legitimately appeared to be trying to negotiate some royalty deals. So that'll be interesting. They're a small manufacturer with small runs. I can't imagine this being big dollars. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. And then, look, I think, like you said, Tom Cruise is one level. Whether Ninja Turtles would bother kind of, you know, taking any action over a Rat King head. But hopefully the third parties can come and fill the gap if it's there, because I think that might tip people across the line if you were a bit on the fence. I reckon I would have ended up going on that version of Rat King knowing I could get the Ramen toy head and substitute it in. I think it would have been enough for me. So let's see where it goes.
Only time will tell.
Yeah.
All right, moving over to Hasbro window packaging. So we've got the window packaging is back after another fan-demanded, you know, concern. Has everyone in the internet world has voiced their opinion and said, hey, we're not a big fan of the no window packaging. Can't you, you know, help a brother out or a sister or whatever? And they've come back and said, okay, we'll do it for the more premium collector lines and so maybe retail release will be mostly all boxes with the imagery on and things, but you know, the collector lines windows back, and apparently it's more biodegradable than previous forms.
A lot of concern was that the plastic they had been using was what they call virgin plastic, not necessarily a recycled product. But if they do biodegradable, that ticks a big box in a lot of people's minds. And if you can chuck it in your recycling, as most people would, or if you've got the option to drop it in your green recycling because it is biodegradable, be it 50 days or 50 years, let's do that. 100%. Great idea.
I think it's a great idea. Now, for my show until later on, I've got a, I won't reveal what it is, but here it is in the box.
It's a cardboard box.
It's a cardboard box. It's got, it's not rocks. It's great. I don't think that's rocks. I think that's an actual figure inside. We're going to crack that. And one of the things I'm going to test is how close is it to the box image?
Yes, good call.
That's what I want to know because, you know, like the photography is probably done at a very different time to when the manufactured product is available. So you're getting some form of prototype or paint master or something that's not the product. So I want to really hone in on how accurate it is to the box. But I think it's, I think for me, that's good news because, you know, this just doesn't sing to me in the same way.
Honestly,
does it?
If I saw that up on your shelf without knowing that was a figure, I'd think it was the VHS of the movie or something. Like without looking at it too closely, just a glance over your shelves and things, and I would probably, you know, call that. Oh, that he's got, you know, Indiana Jones, or he's got that figure on VHS from that movie.
You're spot on. So that's good news. I'm very happy about that. Something else I was very happy about was Masters of the Origins Skeletor.
You like it?
Well, no, I don't. I'm not a fan. No, nah. To be honest, I'm not a real fan. But I'm compulsive, so I had to buy it, and I was actually able to order it. So I did get some. If you do want one, I've got a spare.
Thank you, sir.
There you go.
I'll take you up on that. I was going to message you, and I'm like, do I really want to put Trent in a situation where he has to wake up at 2 a.m. Australian time?
I was awake
buy
anyway.
Buy me a toy.
This bloody insomnia helps for these sort of things. But no, look, I think from what I saw, he sold out in about 5 hours. And
that's a long time considering what we've used to.
And one of the things that was interesting in that sellout was people noticed that he became sold out and then back for sale, sold out, back for sale a couple of times. And one of the theories was that scalpers essentially are kind of, they're doing a bit of, you know, gaming or testing the system. And obviously the quicker it can sell out and the more they can buy, the more they're going to resell on the secondary market. So one of the theories was scalpers go in big and then kind of assess if it's selling out or not. And if they've just gone, I'll buy 100 and it's still there a couple of hours later, they might actually cancel that order. That might have been the reason why we were seeing these things jump up and down. I don't know if the system is that real time, but it's an interesting phenomenon, the scalpers driving up, you know, because if it sells out in a minute and you've got 100 of these, there's going to be hundreds of customers that want it. I mean, I still want my Colder. You know, that I missed out on. Yep. So, you know, it's good money. But anyway,
Do they have minimum and maximum orders for these?
Well, they did, but they had a 3-order limit for this one.
Yep.
But I feel like there's bots you can run a bot. You know, I mean, look at what artificial intelligence can kind of do now. And I don't think it's too hard to create a little program that basically goes in and
changes your IP and whatever.
And I guess places 100 different orders that are essentially one order. And I know that was happening even back in the day of Super 7, because they would say, you know, it's an order limit of 3. And then obviously these bots were doing that work. They'd go in manually and obviously do some checks, and they were cancelling orders where they thought these bots had kind of... So it's obviously able to be done. Mm-hmm. And whether they pick it up through credit card numbers or billing addresses or something, there's a common link that they've sort of bypassed. So anyway, he's an interesting figure because he's essentially like... He almost fits into that anti-Eternia kind of world. So we've got an evil red He-Man who is the villain in that world. And then it kind of makes sense maybe for Keldor or Skeletor to be the good guy, right?
But why does he look like
He-Man? That's the thing. That's the bit that I don't get. Why, when you've got Faker and you've got Anti-Attorney He-Man, why do you need another blue He-Man that just has like purple armor?
Because I could accept this a lot more if it had a different head sculpt. If the head sculpt was more like Keldor, and this was the, you know, Anti-Attorney He-Man versus Keldor version, you know, in that universe and that from that German thing. But to me, this is just like, okay, we've got Faker, which has been around since, you know, the creation of Masters.
Yeah.
Then we got Anti-Attorney He-Man, which had origins from the German audio tapes.
Which made sense.
Then you've got, you know, Keldor and things and stuff and all the other iterations that have come back. This just looks like a, cash grab. Yeah. Just a complete colour
Who
repaint.
Would fall for such a cash grab blatant scheme?
Me.
Yeah, I just.
But it feels very much like that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I would have loved the Keldor head. In fact, I think with mine, I wouldn't mind putting the Keldor head from that Rise of Evil 2-pack. Yeah. There's always a question on whether the blue's going to kind of line up or not. You're not quite sure which blue they use.
That's right.
But anyway, it's an addition to the line, and for the completists out there, I'm sure they're snapping him up as much as they can. Something else people might want to be snapping up. Do you want to be Batman?
I was Batman for my 30th.
Yes, you were.
And I had a plastic belt as opposed to a real Batman utility belt. Who makes this one?
This is NECA.
Wow. And it comes with, 11 gadgets.
Yep.
Which, including the batarang, including the, grappling
launcher,
hook.
Yeah.
You've got all those little, you know, canisters capsules. And stuff. Yeah, capsules of gas and stuff. It looks really cool.
Yeah.
I'll give, you know, credit where credit's due. But I think, you know, good for a cosplayer.
Definitely.
But not something I'd go out and buy just to sit on my shelf. I'd spend more money on a grappling, the throwing Batman.
Mm. The Batarang.
Batarang, that's what I'm looking for, yeah.
So that's actually designed on the 89 Batman film utility style belt.
Yep.
And it's designed for all. It's extendable
at the back.
It's extendable options on it, so you can go anywhere from say 31 inches up to a slim 50 inches around the waist. Whatever suits.
That's clever.
Your needs.
That's clever because you know, you buy a replica helmet or you buy a belt for this matter. The first thing you want to do is try and wear it, whether you're wearing your tracky dacks or you're wearing a proper Batman cosplay. You want to have that option of wearing it, whether you decide to wear it out or not.
That's right. Yeah. And if you go to a buffet as Batman, you need that extendable belt option built in.
Yep.
Very
cool.
Very good. All right. Well, that's all we're going to... Anything else that's popped up in the last little bit? You've got... you're probably going to talk to that item you've got in front of you a bit later
that's
on.
That's going
to
be my latest scores.
Okay, there's some great little tidbits in there about some upcoming news as well.
Yep.
The couple more Patreon questions. Scotty, you've put in a question as well, haven't you?
Well, technically, I am still a Patreon.
You are.
So why not contribute to the Patreon questions?
No, very good. Well done. All right. Well, WebStore83 asks, do you think you could get into a new toy line based on a brand new IP in 2023? It's a great question. Similar to choosing to start collecting Motu back in 82 or Transformers in 84, is it nostalgia, like Origins, connection to IP, Legends, Black Series, McFarlane, or homage to existing IP? So that new Motu-esque line that I'm forgetting the name of, is it Masterverse? Legends of Dragonora.
Legends of Dragonora. Gotcha. That's what I'm thinking.
Yes. New line, but sort of based on that nostalgic feel.
Yep.
So what is it when it comes to modern toys? What are you looking for? So would you do a new IP today, 2023?
Oh, if it jumped off the page as... It spoke to me.
Yep.
Like it had those elements that I look for in a toy. 100%, I would definitely explore the options of starting a new IP.
Yep.
So that point around, say, like a Legends of Dragonore, as an example, there's potentially like a new Battle Beast line coming from a guy. Is that
Cosmic Beast. But,
Cosmic Beast.
But my only concern, like, I'm not sure, because he's been a bit quiet lately. He's released some stickers and things of Cosmic Beasts and stuff. But my only concern is factoring the cost of, you know, if I'm paying $50-$60 alone for these little custom characters, right, which, you know, probably is 100% worth it. His time, his effort, his blood, his sweat, tears, his design work, his printing, his painting, all those things got to cut. And then you've got to work, factor in the production run. Let's say it's 200 per, you know, character and things. All that, you know, comes into an equation. How much articulation is it going to be faithful just to the 2 points of arm articulation and things? So let's say it's $60 USD, right? And then to get it for, to me, it's going to cost me like $40 and things. Even though it doesn't take up a huge footprint on my shelf,
yep,
it's a very expensive figure for something that is a completely new IP.
Do you have any... Are those numbers just numbers you're creating, or you got a bit of a
I'm just so he could, theorizing.
Theoretically, could only be $20.
Look, if it's $20, I'd be a lot more inclined.
Yeah.
But just going by, design, you know, what I've seen other custom items go for, and things. I'm just, you know, throwing numbers out the air. There's another guy that's, you know, continuing the characters of Battle Beast, and he's only releasing them in grey form. Like he's done a hammerhead shark,
almost and, like Warhammer sort of paintable figures.
And a hammerhead shark and a raccoon, but what's the other sort of rodent that's black and white? Beaver. No, not a skunk.
Badger.
A badger type thing. And people were painting him up blue and stuff. He looks really cool. It comes with little weapons and things. They are wicked. But, like, you know, I'd want a sort of John Clawfield talent to paint it.
Yeah.
You know, and I just don't want a grayscale figure sitting on my shelf. So all these numbers come into play and things. But for my call out for this toy line is the something from the Four Horsemen, the Figure Obscure line.
Yep.
You know, I've got old mate Krampus down there. Phenomenal. Like, you know, the fact that I was able to get that in Australia, and that was like $85 posted. So I thought that was a pretty good deal. And I've already put money down and put my name down to get the Headless Horseman, the green, toxic looking one, the second release. And, you know, I with the horse and things. And I think that almost looks better for in my color palette tastes than the original
than the
one.
OG.
And I just kind of had to have it. You know, I'm like, I'm not all in, but I'm very comfortable to cherry pick when I see, like, easy pass on the Father Christmas. It was just beautiful figure and all, but not my horror tastes enough. You know, when they reintroduce something like that on multiple podcasts and multiple forums and multiple websites, one toy of the year, even I think we rated it really high.
Sure did.
That, you know, it's sort of something's got to be, you know, I'd like to own something that cool, and the chances to get a repaint is quite exciting. So
cool. Yeah, look, I went through a phase probably 5 years ago-ish where I just wanted something new. I was maybe a bit burnt out from just kind of the old IPs and all this sort of thing. And there were a couple of Kickstarters that I got behind because they were in the style of something I liked. You know, like in the style of Battle Beasts or in the style of Master of the Universe. And recently I've gone very much back into a vintage aesthetic. So I really reconnected with vintage. And in saying that, any new IP that's doing things in a vintage style, I'm interested in. So I'm interested in like the Star Wars repros, and I'm interested in the Indiana Jones repros that they've got going now. Like new toys, existing IPs, but homage
vintage
to
collection
vintage.
Or whatever they call it.
The vintage collection. So the space, because I'm so limited in what I'm getting now, the space for a totally new IP just kind of doesn't fit my wheelhouse at the moment where I'm at in my collecting. The exception for that is to Ben's point, something that feels like a continuation of a line I love. So Legends of Dragonlore, I'm cool with that because it is, I mean, they're Master of the Universe figures in aesthetic, in style, like as if, and the quality is sensational. The quality of those figures, to me, in my mind, for not much more than an Origins, like they're a little bit more pricey, but not much more. The quality you're getting is superior to what we're getting in Origins. And I'll confirm that when I've got them in hand, but judging from the pictures, they do look really nice. So yeah, for me, not a lot of room for brand new IP right now. But you never know. Like, you never know what you're going to see.
100%. 100%. to me, coming to mind would be the Cosmic Legions.
Yes.
That would speak to me because I do enjoy that sort of futuristic, that space element in a toy. And simply because of the quality of their sculpt and their product they put out, if I were to jump on a new IP, that is what I would have a good look at.
And you can't lose with the Horsemen, right? And I've been so tempted by some of those designs. Like, man, they are incredible. And the good thing is with something like that, if you did get it, and in 2 or 3 years, time to move it on, you'll always do well. You'll always get secondary market prices.
You definitely won't be losing money.
You won't be losing money, which is very nice. Scotty, 100%. Grace us with your question.
This is our final question.
It is.
So, guys, of all the toy lines and properties that you love and connect, which character would you like to see realized in toy form? So something that maybe you've seen it in a comic book, in a game, that you think would add an outstanding element to an existing toy line like Turtles or Masters or something like that. Is there something out there you would love to see brought to life in toy form?
I think I'm almost getting my dream come true with the Toxic Crusaders.
Paluto
coming out through Ish Toys. They've just teased the box art. I'm super excited about that. To Trent's point, it's a bit more cartoonized than what it some of the other toy packaging was. But I don't mind that because that's Turbo Pork's design. So I think it comes back to his art style. Ish has chosen him. He's going to continue that art style. We sort of knew what we're going to get. You know, if he went with someone else, we might have got a more gritty and realized design. But I'm very, very happy. The artwork is so good on that box. I'm almost like, man, I need to find a space not only for the figure but the box art as well. but that's a big one. That's been an omission since I realized that existed. So just things like, I love prototypes. I love staring at those. You know, we got a Aliens Kenner dropship that was teased that never got released. So, you know, and that's not a big ship. It's not like the big aircraft carrier that was released. It's actually quite compact and things. But still, the two wing bits fold out for the guns and stuff. So you could make it look bigger than what it actually was. So they're probably my big call-outs, aside from actually a character or something. And then there's characters like Lizor, you know, not being made in the classics toy line. You know, some of the variants of Catra, there's some really cool variations of her. More toy aesthetic rather than cartoon aesthetic. That's the fine line you go down when you create... Like, much to the Ninja Turtles Ultimates, here we're talking about our concerns with Rat King, and, you know, all the She-Ra Princess of Power figures were all very cartoonized. They sort of threw the ideas of the toys in the, out the window and made them all, you know, universally cartoon-wise. Right, right. So I've seen some customs and things of more toy accurate, and there's something really, a pleasing seeing a pink, you know, dressed Catra with a black skirt and tail and things. It's until you see it in 3D
you
form,
don't know
you're like, wow, that actually works. And it works really well. And that nostalgia pull strings, yeah.
Look, if you'd asked me this question, I think we've had a similar question. And I reckon 5 years ago, I would have rattled off a whole heap of answers. And what that tells me, because I'm not answering that, we've got a lot of them. We've got a lot of these things that we wanted, whether they were sort of made in prototypes. Like, looking around the room, one of the big ones was a Mirage Shredder.
Yep.
And that was, you know, that Mirage, when, you know, a massive hiatus between what NECA did with those Turtles and then that second four-pack with the Shredder and the Foot and the Elite Guard. That was on my top list. Then the Renee from the Mirage. Like, you know, that... I needed that. And then we got two versions from NECA. So they were just... And they were ticking things off in the Masters line. Like, you know, the cohesive kind of one line and bringing in a lot of those core characters like Adora figures, like Marlena figures.
Yep.
Now, for me, the gap now, with Origins doing so well and with what we've got in terms of Slammerai and the Horde Snake Trooper and those sort of, you know, this is what the line was going to be, and this is what the Errol McCarthy black and white artwork images showed, and they're giving us those, they're realizing them now. For me, that gap exists still in 5.5-inch Origins. I'd like to see an Adora in that line.
Yes.
And I'd love to see a Marlena in that line. And for Darren as well, because that would have been the crowning part, I think, of an Origins wave for those two in particular. So they're big. Trying to think if there was anything else. I had another one that's just escaped me. But I'm just so happy we have got so many of these things that 5 years ago would have seemed like kind of pipe dreams, or even 10 years ago. And collecting has changed. The stuff we were into is more mainstream now. The people that loved it are running these companies and making this sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm just super happy. I've got so many of those gaps.
For me, as a Fantastic Four fan, I would, and I'm desperately waiting to see and realize a She-Hulk as a member of the Fantastic Four. Yes,
right, yeah. Like in the uniform?
Yeah, yep. Yeah, that's right. Sort of, because during the John Byrne run of the Fantastic Four, she was a prominent figure. She was there for a number of issues. So she is widely recognized as not a key member, but just a person who's always been a part of the lore of the Fantastic Four.
Yep.
And we've had a She-Hulk figure in the Marvel Legends range, a couple of variations of it now. Surely we're getting close to a point where we're going to see that Fantastic Four version of the She-Hulk. There's not that much more retooling in what they've already got to get us there. Listen up. Give me my Fantastic Four She-Hulk, please.
In a movie year.
In a movie year?
Well, I mean, she's got her own show and things. Like,
you'd think so.
I'd like to think that she's popular enough and, you know, you'd known think, enough. Yeah. So.
All right, I will put an asterisk there and say comic book accurate.
Yeah, I understand. Yes. But sometimes you need a TV series or a movie in order to bring in those more obscure things. I genuinely don't think that we would have got the selection of Transformers and things that we do have without the Bay films. You know, thanks to Ninja Turtles, we've got so much more stuff on the pegs and things because they had movies. Like the movies or not, they fuel a certain excitement and retailers. I hate to say it again, but Scott Nikely always said, in a movie year, you could get this, that, and that. And I truly believe that you can do so much more once you have that box office, you know, assistance. I'm not saying it has to be a hit or anything.
Yep.
But once you've got that box office assistance, you can do so much more in a retail space, you know. And it just doesn't have to be tied perfectly to the actual film. It can be offshoots and fan demand and you know, deep cuts.
All right.
I have got actually, Frank has just messaged me on the side, and he would like to see, in a G.I. Joe classified style, a Donatello inspired figure.
He must be sick.
He's delusional. He's got a fever.
Huge fever, yeah. Gosh. Oh, man. Go back to bed, Frank.
Who are you?
I'm Batman.
May the Force be with you.
Life and save. Forgiveness is divine, but never pay full price for late pizza.
As you can see.
All right, let's get into some movies now. We'll just touch on these briefly. I haven't seen Dungeons & Dragons, but we might start there. Now, Scotty, you're going to have to take us through the scores. I think some of us were particularly harsh on D&D. And again,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Are we eating humble pie here? Because there's some good reviews coming out of D&D.
All right, let's cover off what we put down as scores out of 19 previously. Ben has said if it's a hit and his family enjoys it, it's a solid 15.
Yep.
Trent has said it'll be shit. 9 out of 19.
Whoa, I was harsh. But Frank, not as harsh as
there is. Someone went even harder. I said it was going to be shit. 5 out of 19.
5 out of 19.
Yep. I've still got memories of the garbage film from the 90s.
Yep.
And Frank had 15 out of 19 as his score.
Right. So, has everyone seen it? Aside,
I haven't seen it.
Scott,
I've been trying, but my sources denied me access.
Oh, right. Okay. So it's just me and Frank, and unfortunately, Frank is obviously, you know, too sick to attend. So I'll shout it out. Firstly, with the score, and that'll sort of let everyone know what I overall thought about it. So the fact that I wrote in my original score, if the family enjoys it, right? Because watching that trailer, I did watch the trailer before yep. I rated it and things, and I thought it looked pretty good. I thought it looked fun and things, and I thought, oh, this is very family appropriate. You know, I looked at the rating. Yep, family appropriate, and I thought this is perfect for the get the girls excited. You know, on the on the outs of Stranger Things and things, you know, like on the hype train of that being played, you know, not as a focal point, but as a background game that they're playing, you know, continuously through all the seasons and things, always bringing it up and things. So my kids knew, you know, loosely Dungeons & Dragons existed. It was a, you know, role-playing game, blah, blah, blah. And we went and saw it. And honestly, there's very few things I could fault on it.
Right.
This is coming from a D&D person that I've never played the game. Like, legit, never sat down and played the game. And that's probably comes down to friendship circles and time. You know, I got a job pretty early when I was young, and that sort of cancelled me out from, you know, social, you know, gatherings on the, you know, on the weekends and things. Anyway, I rate it 17 out of 19. Like, yep. And that's a solid, you know, 17 out of 19, thought it was great. The family loved it. There's plenty of dragons for those concerned. There's at least two or three main ones.
Is there like a dragon that's eaten a bit too much?
Yeah. So it is a bit chunky. That almost is a spoiler, right?
Sorry.
Because,
I saw it in an ad.
It's okay because it's been out for a few weeks now, and if you wanted to know, you'd know. And it's not a spoiler in the sense that it's going to spoil anything. It's just that surprise that the head pops out. It's like, oh, cool, that's a wicked looking dragon. And then the body comes out and it's like, oh, this dragon's, you know, quite large. And then it, you know, it can barely fly, and it's sort of, you know, tumbling along because it can't control, because its weight is just pulling its itself down. And it's almost comedic, but it's still a huge threat, you know, and things. But honestly, that was great. It's just a perfect amount of comedy and action and things. And even though, as I said before, I'm not into the lore, I barely watch the TV series and things, I saw quite a few really cool Easter eggs in there that were just fun nods to the cartoon or whatever, you know.
Yep.
And I really, really enjoyed it. So, big thumbs up to the guys behind that, because they certainly... you know, delivered a family-friendly film.
Nice.
So well done. Now, just I've got a message from Frank. He's, you know, he had a undiluted spell this time. So Frank from D&D did not have any right being as good as it was.
Right.
Shades of Marvel Phase 1 with its pacing, characters and banter has the potential to be almost as big as Stranger Things was for drawing people to the board game. Years worth of lore and content to pull from for many a sequel. And he rates it as a big hit at 17 out of 19 as well. So.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
I've got a very good mate I catch up with for lunch every Monday. We go out for beef fur. We're well known at the restaurant they just see us come in and the meals appear sort of thing. But he's big into pop culture, but he just loves his Warhammer. So his big thing is he just paints his Warhammer, doesn't watch TV, doesn't watch movies. And I caught up with him a couple of weeks back, and he's like, oh, you know, I went and saw D&D, took the kids because they wanted to see it. And he's like, you know, it was great. It was really entertaining. He's a big D&D player. We've done a fair bit of the role play. I've done it online with him. And I'm not that great at it, but he's very good at the Dungeon Master stuff. And he really enjoys it. For someone who doesn't really want to go out and watch a lot of this stuff, he really enjoyed it. And I thought that is the mark. If he's giving it a good review, it must be fantastic. And it must be, like, you know, Ben said, kid appropriate. So Callum, who's not a movie person by any means, was like, "Oh, Dad, are you going to go see this D&D film?" And I could tell he was really interested in it. So I was hoping to drag him along in the school holidays and see if he enjoys it. Because according to him, he only likes movies where there's blood and violence.
There you go.
Everything else is boring. Right. So that's what I've been doing wrong all this time. I've been showing him Peter Rabbit and Smurfs.
Yeah. Bad fathering.
Yeah. It's neglect.
Well, I've got something to look forward to then when I get my hands on this film to watch. Looking forward to it.
No, definitely. If you haven't already, go and check it out with the knowledge that it is a pretty good film. So, yeah, go for it.
Yeah, nice. Now, the Super Mario Brothers
movie. Well, you can't use the accent.
I'm Italian. I'm allowed to. Is it? I can do that.
It's not cultural appropriation then?
No, well, that's I'm Cucchiarelli. I'm an Italian.
You're going to do the whole segment in that voice now.
Hey,
who's seen it?
I've seen it. Yeah.
You've seen it, Scotty?
Oh, no, I haven't seen this one either.
Okay, I've seen it as well.
Well, I had Robbie, who loves his movies. He's 7. And I think I was going to take him. Callum was going off to a soccer game with his friend. And Robbie was a bit upset. So I said, look, Robbie, I'll take you to Mario. You can bring some friends. So I picked up a couple of his friends, went there, Hero Dan, and get popcorn and Choc Tops. And we sat front row at Nord Cinema and had the kids there and came on. And Robbie, for a kid that, kids sometimes at that age don't have the best attention span, glued to his seat the whole time while his friends were, up dancing around and throwing popcorn and doing all that, Robbie didn't want to miss a single bit of this. So, he loved it. He was, singing the praises afterwards. But this was fantastic. There was so much in terms of the Easter eggs without it being, over the top. But there was just so beautifully done. And, a lot of criticism about, I think I heard criticism about Seth Rogen and voicing Donkey Kong. And obviously there was the whole, voice of Mario and how that was going to work. And they had gotten rid of that traditional Italian accent. And it's these guys are kind of from Brooklyn. They're not immigrants themselves. They're sort of second generation Italian. So you go to the family dinner and there's the uncle that's got the Italian accent, but these guys are American and it fits and it works. And the Chris Pratt thing works really, really well.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah. I think it would have cheapened it to have, in the context of the story, to have a very, that Mario voice. I honestly don't think it would have worked. So I think it was the right move. And same with Seth Rogen. I think Donkey Kong was better for that voice than having that real gorilla style of voice. I think that worked. Animation was beautiful. I think the story was great. They twisted a few things around. So Princess wasn't the damsel in distress. She was a kick butt kind of princess. Excellent. And I think that worked. And as a byproduct, probably Luigi got a bit more of that damsel in distress character.
But also I think that's where it continued the story along, that Mario could not give up because he had a stakeholder of family involved.
The driver.
He needs to save his family member. And Princess Peach, a knowledgeable character of this world that he's entered, was able to assist him and, saw... the enemy of my enemy is my friend type thing. Mm-hmm, so that's what the, saving grace was. I thought it was cool. I genuinely loved it. Kids loved it. Family loved it. As to Trent's thing, so many Easter eggs, like the first opening scene is pretty much the first level. They're running along, doing the first level of the game, going girders and jumping fences and things. It's really cool. I don't think you can exaggerate enough how beautiful the animation is.
It's fantastic.
When you can look at animated water and not, and your brain is like, that's real water. That is real. I could drink that water right now.
Yeah.
That is when you know the animation is up the top notch, most highest quality. And I think, the movie coming out in 2023.
Yeah.
Any earlier, you would not have got that beautiful animation backing it, right? And this is a little bit of a spoiler, but, if you looked into the movie at all of you, or if you've heard Jack Black talk at all, you'd probably know this. But there's a scene in the movie where he does a bit of a song and dance.
The piano.
Yeah, the piano, right? Yeah. And I hate musicals. Like, there's only a few movies where I can accept it. So this musical part comes on, and I
cringe.
Yeah, I was like, I sank back on in my seat. I'm like, oh man, here's the Disneyfied, you know, part of the movie. Like, what? How long is this going to go? Is this going to have all the Koopas and things dancing in the background? Like, is everyone just going to come out of nowhere and start, you know, singing along like they've rehearsed this, you know, a million times? But instead, it goes the opposite way, and it is the most heartfelt, made up on the spot song you've ever heard. Like, I don't know what I'm going to sing next, so peaches. You know, and it's just, all it is a little rhyme, and then all the gray area is just peaches, and no word of a lie, that has been played on Spotify in every room of my house.
Yep.
Like, from the kids, just like, Suri, can we listen to Peaches from Mario, you know, and it's just played all the time, and you know, it's so catchy. I don't even shine away from not listening to it myself. No,
and it's the brilliance of casting Jack Black for that, because that musical parody, like you say, it's not Disneyfied. It's done. It fits in the story. Like, he's just sitting at a piano. It's not like the world turns into a musical and everyone's dancing around choreographed dance. It's him playing the piano, and there's some great moments with the guy that comes up and sitting next to him, and the wizard, the wizard character, who's fantastic. Very, very clever. Jack Black is fantastic.
It's almost Robbie Williams style, like ad-libbed for Aladdin. You know, just, hey, Jack, we need you to create a song for this movie. Can you see what you can do? Yep. And he's not just, only nails it, he's almost going to win an Oscar for that song. Like, it is that good.
Yep.
But it almost has to be seen in the movie context for you to fully appreciate
how
grand it is.
Yep.
And then from then on afterwards, you can be like, that is one
it's
cool film.
Part of that arc, because obviously, you know, and again, a little bit of spoilers coming up here, but Bowser's this huge, intimidating turtle, but he's got a soft spot. He wants to marry Peach. That's his kind of motivation for his conquest. And he's practicing, you know, through the movie, how am I going to, when I meet her for the first time, how am I going to propose, and all this sort of thing.
Yep.
So that the song in that context, it's quite a juxtaposition of what you're expecting from Bowser, and I think that's what makes it so funny.
And also, like, it's beautiful, you know, orientation for the family. He's not a solidified Skeletor, I'm the bad guy, full stop. You know, that's not his thing. It's like, he actually likes her, and he just happens to not know what the good way to, you know, to do anything.
Can't articulate himself well. Must
and
be difficult.
That's brilliant. You know, I love the fact that you've got a good proportion of Mario Karting in the movie. Like, really cool. And it's not ham-fisted in, you know, your face. It's actually, you know, progresses the story along. And also when he sort of first meets Donkey Kong, it's a bit of a Super Smash Brothers avenue, right?
Yeah.
And it's just those two tokens, you know, scenes and things would just speak to me in volumes, because I love that sort of thing. And they're just, you know, someone's shared like, oh, this is the Nintendo, you know, movie universe. You know, you're going to get Kirby, Metroid, Zelda, you know, and then the finale in 4 years' time is Super Smash Brothers. And I don't know how true that is.
I think
it's all fan-made.
Yeah.
But damn, if I don't want that. I want that so bad to be real, because that's, you know, taking what has worked for Marvel and things and putting it into Nintendo. And I remember saying, what's the next Nintendo film? And Metroid is so high up there on my wish list that I want it to be real.
But that scene, I mean, it's brilliant for a number of reasons. I mean, that scene is entertaining in its own right? Because there's stakes to why they're battling, and there's the power-ups that are put sort of throughout. And so it's done very well. And obviously, Donkey Kong is the superior fighter in that scenario. But it goes back to that very first appearance of Mario, right? Where Donkey Kong's at the top and he's got Prince and he's throwing the barrels down. Mm-hmm. Like, so at its heart, it's that game. And then it's got the Smash Brothers element. It's got, you know, the comedy element. It's just so beautifully crafted to pay nods to everything, right? So it pays all those nods, but it progresses the story and it makes sense in the context. So that to me is the real genius of this film. And look, it's not a complex story, but it's got the heart and it's got those elements, right? You've got to save his brother. You know, they've got to get to this place using carts, and they're going to select their own carts. And the way, you know, like the way you were selecting the cart and they're there manufacturing the cart. So, like, you know, you're there almost with the screen going, oh, have you know, this cart, and like, I'll put like these wheels on it.
You're choosing the wheel. You know, you're choosing the chassis of the car. You're choosing the
spray paint color and stuff. But like then actually the Donkey Kong people are kind of actually building it to those specifications in the background. Yeah. So it's just like, it's part of the story, but it gives you a reference to the game and how you'd select your cart. So it's very, very clever. I loved it. And I loved the intro sequence where Bowser just takes out those penguin people. Yeah. You know, like, it's hilarious. It's just so... And the animation of that big floating Bowser head as it sort of comes in looks super intimidating.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Very, very clever. I loved this film. I thought it was fantastic. And I have to give it an 18.
Nice.
18 out of 19.
Yep. I'm as well. I'm a massive hit. Definitely an 18, and a shout out for Davey, who's now got a crush on Princess Peach. So
yeah, so I've heard. Well, funny enough, guys, both of you gave the score of 18 in anticipation for the film, so well done, right on the money. We'll be interested to see what Frank has to say. He gave it a 12 at the time.
Yep.
He was concerned it was going to be a big, long animation, like a game cutscene, but I think they did so much more.
I think they did too, yeah. Yeah,
and I can see where he was coming from. Don't get me wrong, but you know, I think they did brilliance. They, you know, this is their Nintendo's main IP. You know, if they got this wrong, they might as well wait another 20 years before releasing another film. But
absolutely, yeah.
But because this is doing really well and being really well received, I just hope that they're thinking now of, you know, other IPs,
Star Fox
and things. Yeah, Star Fox is another good one.
Yeah.
You know, give me F-Zero X. Like, oh, the list goes on.
Very good. All right. Well, we got one of them right. That's we're doing well.
Whoa, dude! Nice score.
Later scores time. Now, Ben, you've got something that is literally hot off the press. Scotty, what did you bring in?
Well, I have here on the table behind my laptop. I finally got my hands on Wave 2 of NECA's Defenders of the Earth. And in that Wave 2, you get your Mandrake the Magician.
Yep.
You get Lothar. And, of course, you get Ming's bad guy, the crystallized, iced-up robot, Garrix.
Ice to meet you.
Ice to meet you. And in this version of Garrix, he's done, like, as a shell... cell-shaded style of figure. That's right. So very cartoon... comic book sort of representation where they use sort of the navy blues, the light blues, and the whites to create that crystallized look on him.
Yep.
And I think he looks actually quite striking. He looks really, really nice as a figure. I'm just going to hand him around.
I think that it assists with the color scheme because his body is very angular.
Right.
And it's,
so you
it's
can
very
just paint. You can paint the panel.
Rather, yeah, you can paint the panel without. Leaving a, hey, this is a round, you know, arm. We're just going to draw the line here where the shadow stops.
Yep.
You know, whereas there, because you can see where the angles are, it's that quadrant is, you know, that color because it is a quadrant of its own, and then it goes to an angled another piece, like a stone or something. Like
he's very cool.
Sharpened stone or something.
I like
he's
him.
A very striking figure to
very
have
striking.
Up on the shelf.
What I like about it is it feels and it looks like a toy. You know, it looks like something you're going to play with and you would have had in the 80s, right? I think that's really, really cool.
Is there anything different with this chest? Because I know the original toy one had the face on it.
Yeah, that's right. It had that hologram sort of lenticular sticker of Ming's face in the middle of his chest. And disappointingly, they've excluded that from this figure here. I kind of feel in hindsight, it should have been a pack-in.
Yeah.
Don't stick it on the robot.
Gotcha.
But put it in the box. Yep. So if you want to add it and put it on there yourself... 100%. Like it's there to be
a swappable piece or something. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that would have been all that difficult
but
to
the,
do.
The saving grace of that is they are doing a toy version of the Garrix.
They have
and
done
he
a
will
toy
have
version.
The hologram essentially or the sticker.
Yep.
Now this guy's a robot, right?
Yes, or, he is a robot. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So he takes the thrashing, the beating, he's the bash him up, knock him down sort of guy every episode.
Yeah, of course. You can't have the heroes or villains, you know.
You can't hit people or living things.
That's
no.
right. And he comes with a gun, doesn't he? Does that detach? of his hand instead?
He had two accessories with him. He just had the stock standard pistol that all the characters come with, but he also had the ice cannon that you can put on his hand as well. And, yeah, it's just a nice big chunky
blaster
yeah. That, you know, looks like it's grown out of the end of his hand.
I'm just playing with him now. You can get him some really cool imposing stances, and also make him look very zombified, like, you know, I'm coming to get you type thing. Very cool. Is this, you're only going to get one, or is this an army builder?
He is just the one I'll get.
Yep.
As Trent had sort of called out before, they are doing the toy accurate version. That's coming later in the year as a pre-order for me. He'll probably stay on the card because that is done on retro card art.
Beautiful.
Cool. Yep.
Good job.
And that figure stands really, really well on the shelf. He hasn't toppled over yet, so he's designed and very, very well balanced. Congratulations, Decker. I think it's a really, really good figure.
Yep. Nice. Cool.
All right. Should I crack this guy?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. So what I got in front of me here, these are just actually hitting shelves, I think, globally at a sort of, you know, they must have a release date, which has been sometime this week. This is the Indiana Jones Adventure Series from the Raiders of the Lost Ark, and it's got a Build Your Own Ark of the Covenant, which I think you've got, Indy, Marion, Salah, Belloc, and Tot. And I think if you get all five, by the looks of it, you get to build an artifact, and that's hopefully a nice shiny gold. Now, as we were saying, this is a Hasbro figure that is done in the full no window box.
Six inch.
Yep, this is not the retro. So I'm opening it up now, and inside it's actually quite nice. It's got a bit of cardboard. So cool. And again, a little instruction sheet there. The indie figure is wrapped in almost like what you'd get a fortune cookie in.
Yep.
So you reckon that kind
of... Rice paper,
sort of.
It's the same style of packaging they're doing all the Marvel Legends at the moment.
Right. And actually, on there, it's very faint. I don't know if you can see that. It's sort of like a white, translucent type of paper. But there's a gold map.
Oh, that's cool.
A little gold map. So there's a little bit of print on there, which is nice. Oh, and I don't even have to rip that. I was going to rip it, but... and there we go. And so this for... Oh, okay. So he's got a non-removable hat. Okay, yeah, I mean, I've got a really bad one. The eyes, we'll send him around. Actually, maybe he's not that bad. Maybe it's just the way the light's hitting that. Yeah, I think it's just the way the light's hitting that. I think I got a dodgy eye, but maybe that's Harrison Ford's angry eye, how he works. So most people would be familiar with Harrison Ford and his likeness in this style from Han Solo and probably the many... Han Solo figures we've got over the time. He's pretty cool. Like I'm interested in kind of the soft plastic they've used for a lot of the elements here. So there's obviously the fedora is a very, very soft plastic, which is interesting, and the coat as well. So I'm just going to pass him around. He's got a satchel. He's got a gun holster.
So on the box, what does he come with?
So box shows him with a whip.
Yep.
And that's it. But I'll dig out and see what other accessories I've got in here while passing that around. So yeah, it looks like there is only one accessory. It's sort of like I've got this other bag, and I've just whole heap of stuff's come out actually of this in addition to things. Oh no, on the back of the box. All right, so we got a whole heap of accessories here. We've got two different whips, so one in the whipping outstretched motion and one in the rolled up. We've got the fertility idol. That's a very cool accessory. The fertility idol, obviously very famous in Raiders of the Lost Ark. And then a couple of components of the Ark of the Covenant, which are these golden, cast in the same color as the fertility idol, these sort of golden wing elements. So very small, actually, parts of the thing. And a couple of alternate hands. Four additional alternate hands. And his pistol. The pistol is... very small and very, very soft. Feel that.
It's no paint apps on the whip or the pistol.
No paint apps.
Yeah, that's a really tiny gun, isn't it?
It's tiny. I mean, it's probably screen accurate and it's...
proportional to the size of the figure.
But it's very, very rubbery, isn't it? Mm. It's interesting. What do you think of the face on that?
I'm not a fan.
Does it match with the box?
The first thing I saw was the cherub cheeks on him. Like, he's got big... blustered cheeks.
Just do a comparison to the box. I'm interested in a you know, like what you're looking at compared to what you get.
Well, he doesn't have the 5 o'clock shadow, the figure that himself. So on the packaging, he's got, you can see he's sort of like, I do like a week's growth.
Yeah,
on
and
the
which
face.
He should have. Indy yep. should have a 5 o'clock shadow.
Definitely doesn't have that on the figure itself. I reckon the face on the figure on the box is slimmer as well. As right. I sort of pointed out, the cheeks look fairly pronounced. I'll pass that back to you, Ben. But in the face.
It's just something about the eyes.
The eyes don't look right, do they?
As soon as you called it out, it's like I can't stop seeing the eyes. It looks a bit dead. There's a tiny bit, like you can see the sculpting for the 5 o'clock shadow. Like, you know, if you catch the light, you can see the dimples.
Yep.
But it's not, you know, it's not portrayed in painted or form.
Yeah, it needs to be a wash.
Yeah. Which wouldn't be too hard to add in afterwards, but, you know, should you? And noticeable and as well as the fact on his belt, you can clip the little doodad and have him holding his whip, you know.
I heard reports that doesn't stay connected. It's bending back out. So what we were saying was there's a bit of plastic that folds up and it's got a little kind of connection piece. And the idea, a little tab, so you're going to click that in and it's going to hold the whip. But the plastic is, it just keeps pulling the tab out.
Because it's manufactured downwards,
yep.
So it hasn't set itself as the that's its, you know, normal seating position, and because of that, it's instantly
popping out. Yeah, there's no hope. You're going to have to glue that or have it popped out.
Yeah.
So these are the sort. I've got it,
I don't think with any weight on it, it's
going to pop out. Yeah. Okay.
Move his leg and bang, it just pops out.
Yeah, I'm just going to take my glass. I'm getting old. My eyesight is going. Yeah, look, I mean, the honest thing probably is if I'd seen this in a window box, I would have looked for another one. Like, I would have kind of gone, those eyes, that's not probably the best. Let's move on, pick another one. But it's not terrible. Mm-hmm. It's not totally misprinted. So, yeah, it's fine. Yeah, I can see they've made an attempt with the 5 o'clock shadow, but I feel like, yeah, they probably just need to give it a bit more. Okay, well, that's about all I'm going to say about that. Look, the point is, it looks nothing like the box. It looks nothing like this is a composite picture or something. They're totally different things. They're totally different. And honestly, I probably prefer the figure. I think it looks a bit more like Harrison Ford. I think it just looks a bit generic. I think it just doesn't.
Oh, that, wow, man. I'm looking at that. It looks so smooth. Different. This looks like a young Indiana, like a computer CGI'd. Hey, this is when I was.
This is a de-aged Indiana.
Yeah, and then this one actually looks more elderish.
Yeah.
So it's a River Phoenix figure, is that what we're saying?
It's closer to River.
Yeah.
It's closer to River than Harrison. Isn't that interesting, though? But, like, it's nothing like the picture on the box.
But you're right, Scotty. The cheeks are very, you know, flustered versus what we can see on the box picture. But they, I mean, they show all the articulation and things. We can't point him out for that. On the image on the box, he does have his little flap all tucked into his belt. Anyway.
Well, I'm looking forward to the window packaging coming back.
Even on the including imagery, which you see, or the satchel and the whips and things, that looks like a more accurate figure to the actual release.
Yeah, gotcha.
Picture.
Okay.
Will you be getting any others in that 6-inch?
Well,
range?
I have got Marion and Sulla, and I'll probably get, just to complete the arc, I'll get Belloc and Tot.
Yep.
I'm very keen on the retros.
Yep.
The retros is what I really want, but. You know, I'm a big indie fan, and I thought I better just give these a crack.
Did you pick that up at Bricks and Mortar, or did
Bricks
you?
Bricks and Mortar, nice. I walked into actually Toy World of all places in the city, and they had four figures on the shelves, and apparently they just put them out. So I think that was the quota: two indies, one Sulla, one Marion. That was it.
Oh, just a box then.
Just one box. Right. I think they were, and then they had quite a few of the kiddier ones.
Yep.
Like Indie and a motorbike, almost like the Imaginext kind of style.
Yep.
And then they had a bigger 12-inch. Again, it looked like indie, but it was one of those bigger, cheaper kind of figures that I don't interest me at all. So, I probably didn't want him enough to pre-order, but seeing him on the shelf, seeing him for a pretty good price for a 6-inch figure in Australia, $40.
That's good.
That's, I think, you know, it's below the benchmark now of what we get for these in our specialty stores. So we're probably looking at that. $45 is the standard for a Marvel Legends now in Australia. So, yeah, no, I'm happy with that. I think that'll look nice on the shelf. And look, I do open things.
Yes.
I didn't have to rip anything. That is the benefit of the cardboard box. I didn't have to rip any plastic bubbles to get him out.
So, will you display them loose or keep them in the box?
I think I'll keep the box, but I'll display them loose in front of the box. Nice. Yeah.
Cool. Excellent. All right, so my latest score is hot off the out of the mailbox today. My wife actually delivered it tonight. We just looked at it in the mailbox and thought it was junk mail, but no, it was actually issue number 4 of the new Toy Collector magazine, featuring the 3 Biker Mice from Mars as a splash page on the front. So that's pretty cool, and brought to you by Nacelle. And it's the cool thing is you open it up and you bang, hit by toy advertising and things like, you know, BSX from the Ninja Turtles, the Loyal Subjects and Super 7. You've got, you know, Hakes auctions, and there's things like Eternia and the USS Flag and, you know, the G.I. Joes and freaking Lord of the Rings and Transformers. And it's just,
that's how they used to do those ads. It's so cool.
Oh, it's, you know, and I actually looked at one of these ads and found Battle Beasts. Some of my Laser Beasts, one of the websites on there that I was able to. So the ads do work. they've got some toy news and things to kick off. They've got a really cool little side panel of the new 1993 Jurassic Park line from who's it, Mattel. So reissuing the Jurassic World dinosaurs in the same color schemes as they were released by Kenner, and including some of the characters with their massively oversized guns and cannons and things. So that's really cool to see, because that's something I probably wouldn't click on if I was browsing through the online pages and stuff. They've got, you know, things on how to repaint your reaction figures, a bit of a Kyle Reese action figure. They've got some price checks. So, old mate Frank, listen up. A 1988 Playmates Toys Ninja Turtles 10-back Leonardo hardhead mint on sealed card sold in February 23 for $224 at a Bricks and Mortar Billy Galaxy in Portland, Oregon. Yeah. So that's an interesting price check from, not just looking at eBay, but seeing some things. A review on the new G.I. Joe Sky Striker, which is pretty cool, and a whole heap of things. There's got, you know, this traveling banter crew crossing through the states, picking up Ninja Turtle cells and carded figures and artwork and stuff, which is really cool, old Playmates things. A nice little review of the, Superman Lives toy line that never got released. And a whole heap of other stuff. Biker Mice from Mars and things obviously gets a call out, a few pages and stuff. But yeah, I'm really loving this magazine. It's great to just flick through. I read the first 2 issues from cover to cover, and now I sort of cherry pick some of the articles to read. And being a physical copy, I can always revisit that. And I like that aspect. And it's cool being delivered tonight, and I was able to share it with the boys and hand it around the table instead of just, you know, sending them links through Messenger and things. Check this imagery out and whatnot. It was a welcomed addition, and I think I'm subscribed to issue 10 up to. So we've still got a few issues left to go. So, yeah.
It's a bit of a shame that you can't walk into a newsagent, I had a standing order of Toy Fair at Pulp Fiction Comics.
Yep.
And that was super exciting. I mean, again, the internet obviously was around, and I'd be looking at this stuff on the internet, but I'd get excited every time I'd go in to grab Toy Fair, and I'd grab it. And look, yes, some of the stuff was obviously a little bit dated because the internet's instant, but so good. And I still go back and read them. Like, just that physical copy. Mm-hmm. I've trawled through some of those Lee's toy reviews and carded pictures of toy lines. You know, they go back and do little checklists and stuff. They're fantastic. And it's a real shame that that's died off. And good on Blake Wright for putting this out, because it's fantastic. But it is a shame we can't just pick this off the shelf in a newsagent. That would be awesome.
Yeah, massive shout out to Lee's Toy Review, because some of those magazines, like they had a vintage He-Man, a figure list and really beautifully photographed all the weapons, all the shields and with armor and capes and things like that, in tiny little individual photos, and it was only about 6 or 8 pages or something, just in the middle of the issue. And that was honestly my hands, you know,
down Bible yeah.
to collecting that line, to work out what weapons go with what. And I, no word of a lie, I reckon I flicked through that thing a million times through the course of years building my Masters collection. And still to this day, I refer to my Battle Beast and Laser Beast checklist guide, because it's so much quicker and easier than
fiddling around on the
line. Even if I've got, saved web pages and things, sometimes it's just faster to go to my book.
Yeah,
and it's more enjoyable even.
It is.
Exactly, exactly. So, to this day, I love physical checklist guides and, Laser Beast. I can get a Battle Beast checklist guide from a fan, but I can't get a Laser Beast guide, and that is that's the closest thing to a, the most complete list I know of is in existence. So, yeah, and that's quite a few years ago. That's at least 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they knew what they were doing back then, so they were right on it.
Yeah.
So, are you guys up to anything exciting next weekend by any chance?
I think I've got a special thing in the calendar. Of course, the Adelaide Toy and Comic Fair, is that right?
That is correct. Yep. Yep. Well,
we've all got tables there, so that'll be exciting. I haven't even started going through my stuff, so I'm in a bit of trouble. But now there is an early bird offer out there. I think tickets are selling fast for that, but I think it's $20 gets you in the door early. It's not much more than that.
$15, $20, something like that. Yep, and you get in from 9 o'clock.
An hour early, right?
Yep. Get you an hour.
And honestly, that was the way to go for some of the collectors, because the lineup didn't calm down till midday or something last year. It was bonkers.
I'd recommend it. It's worth the extra bucks.
And when you're standing in line, looking through the window and seeing a batwing, and finally it's your time to go in, and you run up to the table and you're like, "Where's that batwing? I've been staring at it for 2 hours, and it's already sold."
Yep.
It's a bitter, thing to your humble pie, yeah. So
Brett and Sarah's Toy Fair next Sunday here in Adelaide.
It's the Anzac Day weekend. Now, who's coming down for that? Are we getting any patrons?
I think they reassess their bank account can't scratch,
Life gets in the way of toys.
Wallet says no at the moment, so that's cool. There's always next year and whatever, or come down for the Mega Toy Fair in June.
It's going to be a crowded affair around this table, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But if you're in Adelaide and you are coming down to that, come by the Toy Power table and say hi. It'd be great to chat.
Come and see. Come and meet a real life Lego master.
Well, Grandmaster.
Grandmaster.
So yes, you can.
Sorry, sir.
Yeah, got to get these things right. No, I think technically you got to win it to be called the Grandmaster. So it's we'll see what happens.
Very good.
Cool.
Is that it?
Cool. That's it.
We're done. All right. Well, gentlemen, always a pleasure. Frank, we did miss you tonight. We hope you get better soon. Thank you to all our patrons for your ongoing support chatter on the Discord. Fantastic chat during the week. A lot of chatter. A lot of great conversations. Dave?
I think Toy Power's almost taken over the DVG Discord.
Well, there's a lot of invites going out in there.
Everyone jumping on there.
No, that's fantastic.
And next week will be the reissue episode. So we got our...
Yeah, I got a bit confused.
Yep.
Old man syndrome kicking in.
So because of the Toy Fair and because we're last minute kind of organising people when it comes to that sort of thing. And we've got to set up, we've got to be there sort of the day before to set up. So,
No episode next week.
Just a reissue.
But we're going to put out a retro. And then following.
We will be back with something big bold and beautiful.
All right.
From a galaxy far, far away.
All right. I'm excited by
that. Yeah, no, it should be good.
Cool.
It should be good.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening in, tuning in. I've just dropped all my boxes. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Toy Power. We really appreciate your company and support. Stay safe, keep well, and we will see you around the toy aisles.
And until next time, good journey!
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/ToyPowerPodcast. At Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram. Or have your say and email us, toypowerpodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher, and please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.